Ecolab Water for Climate. Less water, more growth. Results will vary. Learn more at ecolab.com/EWC. Ecolab Water for Climate. Transforming the way the world thinks about water.
Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Thursday, August 29th. I'm Zoe Thomas for the Wall Street Journal. An evaluation of more than 1,500 climate policies in 41 countries found that less than 5% were actually effective at reducing greenhouse gas emissions. What's going on? Our reporter Eric Kneeler will join us to explain. And sticking with environmental concerns, the aviation industry is responsible for about 2% of greenhouse gas emissions. It set a goal of zero emissions by 2050. Could hybrid planes be the solution to meet that? We're starting with a study that found most climate policies in 41 countries don't work. That may sound bleak, but the findings did highlight how nations can develop strategies that actually do cut emissions. Here to tell us more is our reporter, Eric Kneeler. So, Eric, this study was published last week in the journal Science. Describe to us how it worked. How did researchers arrive at these results?
This was a study that looked at a big database of climate policies that are compiled by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. That's a Paris-based economic agency that has been looking at these trends of policies for the past, say, 25 years or so. And so in using a AI or machine learning algorithm, it was able to sort of sift through this big database and connect them, cross-reference them to stated reductions in emissions of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases from each of these countries. There were 41 countries in the study, and there were over 1,500 policies that were examined.
Eric, can you give us a little background? When did a lot of these policies come about?
Most of these policies have come about since 2015, when more than 190 countries signed the Paris Agreement, a big global treaty for these nations to limit their carbon emissions to a level that would keep global warming from rising 1.5 degrees above pre-industrial levels.
So 63 out of 1,500 policies worked. That's less than 5%. What did these policies that did work have in common?
Well, what these policies that did work had in common was to really combine a couple of economic tools. It could have been a subsidy combined with a tax, you know, a carrot and a stick, for example. Maybe you had an incentive to purchase a greener car, but you also had higher taxes on some kind of fuel that went into this car that would make it much better deal for the consumer. It could have been restricting fuels and power plants, but also offering some kind of subsidies or tax incentives to companies that own these power plants.
How much did the policies that were working reduce emissions by?
The 63 successful policy interventions reduced emissions between 0.6 billion and 1.8 billion metric tons of carbon dioxide. The most successful ones, of course, used a mixture of policy tools. In the U.S., for example, emissions from vehicles dropped 8% from 2008 to 2010 after new mileage rules were put into effect in 2007, along with a tax break for motorists who bought cleaner cars in 2006.
What does this study tell us about what's more effective at reducing emissions, new technologies or economic subsidies?
I spoke with Nicholas Koch. He's a senior researcher at the Berlin-based Mercator Research Institute, and he says the commonality in these cases is where subsidies and regulations are combined with price-based policy instruments. That means that you really can't just assume that a new technology is going to work. You've got to have some other incentives, some ways to either for companies to adopt new technologies or for consumers to adopt these technologies as well. So by putting a couple of things together, you've seen bends and little kinks in the emissions curve that they can have a direct attribution to that pricing tool or that tax or subsidy.
That was WSJ reporter Eric Kneeler. All right, after the break, hybrid planes could help the aviation industry reduce its greenhouse gas emissions. We'll tell you how hybrids get around some of the challenges of all-electric flying when we come back.
AI may be the most important new computer technology ever, but AI needs a lot of processing speed, and that gets expensive fast. Upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is the single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/wallstreet. oracle.com/wallstreet.
You've probably heard of, or maybe you've even driven, a hybrid car, one that uses gas and electric power. Well, what about a hybrid plane? It's the same general idea, and it could help get the aviation industry flying greener while it works to make fully electric planes a reality. Here to tell us more is Sean Kapton, who wrote about this for the Wall Street Journal. So, Sean, what are some of the big challenges or limitations of battery-powered planes?
Yeah, it's a lot harder to run a plane on batteries for some obvious reasons. For example, you can't land every 100 miles to recharge. So you're really limited on the range. Batteries pack far less energy per pound than fuel does, like kerosene fuel, which most airplanes fly on.
What electric planes are close to coming to market now?
So there are some all-electric planes that run just on battery. They're being looked at for things like air taxis, something you'd take around town or maybe from downtown to the airport, maybe 50 miles or less. Those fully electric ones that run just on battery, you're looking at like 4 passengers. They could be coming to market in the next 2 years, but they've got very limited range. You're looking at most 100 miles, probably less. If you want to start getting to several hundred miles, you're going to need to supplement the electric power with some form of gas power.
Let's talk about the approaches for hybrid planes. A basic hybrid car has one engine that combines combustion and electric power. How could this approach be adapted to a plane?
That's one of the approaches being taken. There's a company called Ampere that we covered that's really doing that. The two are essentially connected together, kind of like in a Prius. They are using it in this case. You need a lot less energy to move a plane when it's cruising, when it's in most of its flight. So they're able to run a smaller combustion engine for the majority of the flight, and then they just kick in the electric power when they need a little more power, say for takeoff and landing. So essentially, you're not carrying around a big, heavy, powerful engine that you only need for a tiny portion of the flight.
And what would the emission savings be for these kinds of planes?
They're looking at somewhere around 50% savings, mainly because they're running a smaller engine that's burning less fuel. Now, there are other ways to do this as well. Another approach is simply to have two different kinds of engines. So you've got two propellers on a particular plane we're looking at from a company called Hart that are running on traditional, what they call turboprop engines, and then two that are running on electric. And they can trade off those two to save energy that way.
NASA is also working towards this. Can you tell us what it's doing?
Yeah, NASA is actually paralleling some of the operations we're seeing totally with private companies. They've got one plane that essentially does what I just mentioned with Hart, where they've retrofitted an old passenger plane. They kept the two turbine engines, and then they've added two electric engines from a company called MagniX. Then they also are testing a combination engine where you have the gas and the electric engine in one unit, and they're testing that on an old Saab airplane that seats about 30 people.
Another approach to a hybrid plane is called a series hybrid. How would that work?
That's an interesting idea that also comes from automotive. In fact, one of the first electric cars that GM put out in the 2000s ran on this principle, which is you run on batteries as long as you can, and then you actually switch to a generator that's run by a combustion engine. The idea there is you can run on only electric motors, which has a huge advantage. If you want to add a propeller to an airplane, typically you've got to put a whole turbine engine for every single propeller. If you're running all electric, all you need to add another propeller is basically a small electric motor. So instead of having one or two engines on a plane, you could have 6, 8, 10, up to 30. And the idea is you get much better airflow over the wings, you get better lift, you get better control, you get a lot of efficiencies by doing it that way.
How far along are these efforts? You know, when might somebody be actually flying in a hybrid plane?
Several companies are looking to get planes in the air before the end of the decade, principally by retrofitting older planes. So you're taking like a Cessna for instance, that has already been flown for a year, it's already been approved, it's already a well-known plane, and you're electrifying it. So you still have to test it out and get FAA or whatever agency approval for that new configuration. But the idea is it's a lot easier than building a new plane from scratch. So we're seeing that, for instance, with Ambair, which is projecting to get something in the air by 2028. We're seeing it with another company called Whisper, which builds electric jet engines, and they're saying 2029 or so, within about 5 years.
What other solutions for developing greener planes are being explored?
Well, one way that electric could go a lot further is with what's known as a fuel cell. It's a little bit like a battery in that it takes energy from a chemical reaction, converts into electrical energy. Those could travel quite a bit further, but it's questionable whether those are going to happen or not. Airbus is working the most on that, and they are considering 100-passenger, 1,000-mile range plane, and they're doing some work on it, but they also told me that they may abandon it. They're going to decide in the next year or not if it's worth doing.
All right, Sean Kapton, thanks for bringing us this story.
Anytime.
And that's it for Tech News Briefing. Today's show was produced by Zoe Kolkin with supervising producer Catherine Millsop. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back this afternoon with TND Tech Minute. Thanks for listening.
AI may be the most important new computer technology ever, but AI needs a lot of processing speed, and that gets expensive fast. Upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is the single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/wallstreet. oracle.com/wallstreet.